Blog Talk Radio.
The match itself, it was, again, I think Tom described it very well. It was fine. It was exactly what I was kind of expecting out of these guys. A lot of big man spots, tests of strengths, things like that. I certainly entertained, certainly enjoyed the match, but I don't think I was as excited about it. I don't think I was as excited about it as I thought I was. Or I thought I should have been going into it. I was really, really, really high on the Keith Lee North American title angle. God, I don't even know how long it's been at this point. I've been home so much. My weeks have blurred together, but I want to say it was probably about 5 or 6 weeks ago, maybe more. And I mean, I was really invested in all that stuff. And it just past few weeks, where we haven't seen a whole lot of Keith Lee, the folks been on, the NXT Cruiserweight tournament and Gargano and Ciampa, Candice LeRae. I kind of feel like this has kind of got pushed to the side and it cooled off for me. I wasn't as excited about this as I was a lot of the other matches on the card tonight. And some of the matches I wouldn't even expect myself to be excited for. So that said, I enjoyed it. They did a great job. I also agree. I would expect to see either, Priest or Dijakovic with the North American title at some point in the near future. I didn't really think Lee was going to lose it tonight. I mean, I was giving Priest a bit of a chance, a bit of a fighting chance. But I don't know. I feel like Lee's reign is still young, although it hasn't. And again, this might just be due to the circumstances. It may not have been as strong as they would have hoped. And it's simply because of no crowd reaction, not necessarily because of the booking and where he's been placed. But so because of that, I could see maybe them, going in a different direction, putting it on Priest. But my money was on Lee. And I'm glad they kind of kept it with them. I'm curious to see, where he goes next. I'm assuming it's probably, I don't know. I'm assuming it's probably going to eventually work his way back to Dijakovic. But, we'll see what happens. So, yeah, it was okay. It was good.
Maybe. They've passed that way a lot. And I think it would help Dijakovic. It would help Lee a little. It would help Dijakovic a lot to be doing something that was a little bit more fresh. I would like to see a little bit more of Cameron Grimes in this spot. Maybe he was just a one and done, and we have not seen him in a few weeks. It seems like they're never quite sure. He comes back and he does well, and then they're never quite sure what to do with him. Tell you what, don't know why I unmute us and then we get muted again on this show. It drives me crazy. It happens when people call into the show. That we sometimes get muted, but we should be unmuted now. So hopefully we got, I think we got all three of the calls back that we lost. Anyway, you can call us in future weeks if you're listening to this later, 515-605-9345. Do you want to email us? You sure can. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. We got just two emails this week. That's lesser than the usual, but it was a pretty straightforward show. So there was no weird Drake Maverick situation to email us about. So we are going to go to the phone lines, and then we will get to those emails when they make sense. Right now, we got just one caller who is looking to hit us with some questions. I'm going to say a couple of questions. This is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, how are you?
How you guys doing tonight?
What's up, man?
What's going on, dude?
Doing well. Thanks for the heads up that you could not hear us. I had us unmuted, and then sometimes when new callers come in, mine gets muted and I can't see it. Like, I actually have to go in and look for it. It's bizarre, but enough about my problems. What'd you think about tonight?
Tonight, pretty good show. And I'm astounding over what my first question is. First, Candice LeRae, the first question of the four pack. Candice LeRae, this role, these past 2 weeks has been lights out for her in defining her character, having her beat somebody who's not used too much, so you're not putting her down by the way that they did her tonight. But she's an uber baby face, and the way how she went back in there and attacked her and everything, I'm loving how they built her character. My question for you guys is, how are y'all liking this with Candace and Johnny on week two of it? And why do they have to give all the heels the cool music? Because now Candace's music is number one. It used to be Io Shirai. Why do they keep doing that to us?
Yeah, you know, heels being too cool is a proud tradition going back to, I'm going to say, NWO is one of the bigger offenders. They certainly are not the first cool heels, but they made cool being cool heels cool. So, but yes, this was awesome stuff from Candace. I really like this. She has settled into it, bought into it immediately. She obviously looks the part. I mean, you could say they're laying it on thick, but she is at home in that look, because she has kind of teased that look before, and she's a hair dyer. She does that, like, for real. So, last week, if you would ask me, somebody asked me how, when I was on Greg Parks' show, how are they going to start? Actually, that might have been you, Darrell, but now I can't remember which caller it was. And I said that with Candace, you've got to start small. You've got to get her a couple of winnable matches out of the way and really build her that way. Throwing her to the wolves, I think, could be problematic because it's such a top-heavy, an awesome division right now that if you throw her into the thick of it, she's going to be trading wins and she's going to be back to where she was. She needed something like this. The name of Casey Catanzaro didn't occur to me, I don't think, during that podcast. But if I had sat down and looked, I would have said that is the first one she's going to go after. Casey is just perfect in this kind of role as the, as you say, the uber baby face. And Candace in all her cool glory, almost getting herself in trouble by looking to Johnny to share a taunt during the Gargano escape. I mean, that's all heel stuff. Johnny looking on with that, laying it on thick with the adoration after the match. I loved it. It seems like, okay, so Candace goes over in 4 minutes and 1 second. Later on, Casey Catanzaro is being attended to by a trainer. Caden Carter's hanging out, probably because she's on hand, but possibly also because now you've got a second match for Candace. Makes sense to go to somebody like Caden next, because that's another winnable match at this point, because Caden is not, at this point, a priority. I thought that this was put together quite well, and I really like the way that both Johnny and Candace are playing their roles. I always advocate against a little bit less of real life relationships being together, but if this is the magic they can make together, then don't ever split them apart. Tom?
Yeah, they haven't talked about Team Ninja too much on TV, but it's been a big part of the WWE PC YouTube channel, the friendship that Casey and Caden share that bleeds over into the ring. So having her there backstage, I really like that for the reason you're suggesting, is that it suggests a plan for consistency in using Candace, which is not what she's had in the past. She has not had consistency. And I, you know, similar to what I said about Io Shirai when she turned, I really like the change in the ring. For all the good things that we can say about Candace, it's always felt a little off that she has like a almost like 4 or 5 moves of doom that she goes to that are all old finishers that people used to use in like the mid 2000s, and then she hits the lion salt and never pins anyone, almost never. And so I love seeing her introduce something new here. It's a move, you know, if you're going to introduce a new move, you want something that you can hit out of nowhere, or you want something that's going to tell a story. And this, of course, is something that tells a story, like Io Shirai switched over to the Koji Clutch, albeit very briefly, but she did. And here now we've got this is it the Birchill Stomp or whatever you want to call it, where she does have to get them in that position. But once she does, they are victimized, and you're just looking at their face as they know what's coming. And I think that's, that really tells a great story for the new Candace. This was a very effective night for Candace and Johnny. I think that it would have gotten over in front of a crowd, but again, it is that thing where I'm thinking in the back of my mind, like they're going to be so good at this that they're going to end up becoming exactly like the acts they were criticizing last time, who portray heels, but then end up getting cheered by the crowd, especially in front of the crowd that attends Full Sail. So that maybe they have a clever way to contend with that, the same way they cleverly brought it up last week. But then for the other part of it, yeah, I really liked Catanzaro here. I very, very much liked her match with Mercedes Martinez a couple months ago, because it was the first time that I felt like something effective was being, even in a loss, something effective was being done with what Catanzaro brings to the table. But this match in particular was the first time that I've seen Catanzaro in a significant context. That's not just, you know, the Martinez thing was a very brief affair. I think it was only a couple minutes. This was a little bit longer, and it did not feel rehearsed move for move, which is exactly how Catanzaro's matches, particularly against her frequent working partners of Rhea Ripley and Reyna Gonzalez, had been for quite a while there. So I think that even with the time off she took, she's shown a lot of growth and has brought me to a point where I see a lot of value in her. So yeah, good stuff all around here.
Yeah, she's not yet as smooth as the usual gang, but she's starting to really look a lot more at home and is really good in this role. Hopefully her time will come, but given the logjam, she might be stuck in this. I hesitate to even call her a gatekeeper, but maybe that's what she is. Eric Schultz emails us, "Hello, Jars of Mayonnaise. I imagine Candace's new gimmick will be a major talking point on tonight's show, so I'll just throw this thought into the hat. Candace's new moniker is the pint-sized poison, yet they paired her against the much smaller Casey Catanzaro for her first match. Not sure that screams pint-sized. I guess they probably didn't put much thought into it, since she was already the pint-sized pixie before the turn. Regardless, I enjoyed the match, and that new finisher looks badass. What do you think? Is this the big Candace push we've been waiting for? I sure hope so. I want to say it certainly walks and talks like a big push, but given the amount of talent there already is, and then the fact that Scarlett's got to be figured in somewhere, it's hard to say. By the way, that Burchill stomp she does, she's calling the Wicked Stepsister. That's how they called it out. Not sure how they got there. I'm sure it's some inside thing. But as Eric said here, he said her new moniker was the pint-sized poison, but I thought I saw on the screen poison pixie. I thought they traded the other word, so I'm pretty sure I saw poison pixie. But now, Eric, you're making me doubt what I saw, and maybe I'll have to look for it. I certainly think poison pixie would work better than pint-sized poison, because you don't really want to call out the smallness of a heel, because you just want to call out that they're vicious. So I'll see what I wrote in the recap, because I think I wrote it down. And that's right where I am. I wrote down Poison Pixie, so I think that is what I saw. So not sure. Maybe they're using both. Nate on Casey, Candace, and the Candace act in general.
I also wrote down Poison Pixie, so I think they might be using both, but I know that is definitely one thing I heard. I'm loving this new incarnation of Candace and Johnny, for that matter. The entrance with the new music, which is also awesome, by the way. I'm right there with you, Jarrell. It does, you know, like, I don't know if necessarily getting, quote, wasted or anything on heels. I think this music fits her personality pretty well. But I really like that Johnny kind of comes from out of nowhere, grabbed the mic, and you know, really just kind of saying her praises, saying her accolades, and even just kind of exaggerated them a little bit to make them sound great. You know, he's her favorite wrestler, or she's his favorite wrestler, all of that. It was a great look for both of them, and a very in an obnoxious heel type of a way. I'm really digging it. But yeah, Candice, you know, the new look, all of that. She like you said, she settled into it incredibly well. You know, we saw that last week with the vignette that they did. You know, sitting at the dinner table. I thought she did a bang up job then as well. So you know, I'm all on board with this character. I'm hoping it is a Candice push. We might end up seeing her, you know, dance with the title. I don't know if they'd put it on her. I mean, I think she'd make a very fine champion. But I don't know if they'd necessarily go that route. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Casey, I was a surprise for me. I know obviously she came back, I think it was the Women's Battle Royal, if I'm not mistaken, when we kind of saw her come back and we were all surprised because we kind of thought she was done with wrestling. And you know, she came back and I don't think we've really seen her since. So she was a surprise to me coming out, very welcome surprise. And I also agree she, you know, where she's not completely 100% fluid in the ring, she was much more comfortable in the ring tonight. Her match didn't seem nearly as rehearsed as some of her other matches have in the past. It was just you kind of much more go out there and you know, have a match. You know, I don't know if it was necessarily called and, you know, 100% called in the ring. I'm sure they probably rehearsed some spots here and there, whatnot. But yeah, they did a really good job, of it. So all around, really enjoyed what they had going on with this segment, and you know, Johnny Gargano involved as well.
All right, Darrell, what else do you have for us?
Okay, now my second question. I see we got new tag team contenders. I guess the bro show was okay for certain people, but it wasn't my taste. So I'm glad that they came out and interrupted it. So now that we got new contenders in the tag team division, what happened to the Bivens brand? And do you like how they have this set up right now? Or is this just a stepping stone until they come and finally challenge them?
This was a surprise, I guess, that we didn't get Indy share. And we didn't get any mention of them, like none of that. For a couple of weeks, it looked like that's where we were headed. But I don't know. I feel like just about everything can be attributed to a little bit of coronavirus out there. I have no idea what's going on, but we know from Roman Reigns, from Kyle O'Reilly, that if somebody is distancing and staying off TV, they've made the decision not to call more attention to it by talking about them. They're just not doing it. So maybe that's the deal with one or both of the members of Indushare or Malcolm Bivens. Not sure. Newly Bros show. Now that is something that could very well be polarizing. And from the second it was on, I've been dying to ask these guys what they thought. Tom.
I was very, very surprised by the lack of Indus Chair as well. And I would say that Imperium are probably just guys are there who are willing to come in and provide a successful defense for this new version of the Broser Weights until Indus Chair gets in there. Maybe, you know, probably for Thatcher's benefit. We referenced the coronavirus suspicion last week with Balor just very suddenly being taken off the show, and then they announced that he's going to be on next week, which means that he's there tonight for the tapings, or it means that he's sending in a video from home. I don't know. It's all, you know, lots of question marks. I want to say there are a lot of moving parts, but it feels like there are actually fewer moving parts right now, but they really are moving. So we're trying to keep track of everything. The Newly Bros, this should have been awful. This should have been awful. I rolled my eyes when they announced it. I was having flashbacks to Bobby Fish Can Fry Fish from the Takeover entrance, which just totally killed that and was the one time so far that the Matt Riddle act has gone too far. He's always on the precipice, but that was the one time that I thought, okay, that this is just far too cute, and defining him as more of a comedy act than a guy who can get it done in the ring. This, however, I thought was, and this is going to sound like a gush, and I guess it is, I thought this was one of the best things that WWE television has done yet to embrace the crowdless environment that they are in. Doing something that probably would have been a total stinker and felt really awkward with a crowd there to play off of, but instead using canned laughter as a laugh bit that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And just getting something. Well, it's another thing that relies on a lot of facial reactions too. There are a lot of times where the crowd doesn't pick up on nuances because in a venue like NXT, we don't have a big Titantron to look at. So like Thatcher's like, well, we were scheduled for a match. What the hell are we doing? And being able to get up close on him and see those reactions made it all the funnier. Same goes for Riddle. And, you know, they got their little references in there, like to other game shows, like The Price is Right, or they did the whole, or I think this was the Newlyweds, the reference to the making Whoopi, that infamous where's the craziest place you've made Whoopi question from the 60s or whenever that was. I'm trying to find a cleaner segue into saying this, but I haven't really found it. But Byron Saxton was great here. And I don't think I've ever said that Byron Saxton was great at anything. You know, he was playing it up in sort of a Guy Smiley kind of way, more of a Saturday Night Live game show host kind of way, but he was so good at it.
What a fresh frickin' suit on him as well.
Right?
Yeah, that's his look, man.
You know, and the chain he was wearing, which I'm not sure I've seen before. I was like, that puts it all together. You know, I it made me think that maybe he missed his calling at some point. But anyway, yeah, very, very disappointed.
It was like he was too cool to be Byron Saxton.
Yes, it's true. Very disjointed gush session for me about it. But I, you know, on paper, I would have thought this was awful. And I would, if I was in the writer's room, I would have tried to reject it. But in practice, I thought it was great.
Yeah, we've talked about how this is the time. And I talked about this a lot with Greg Parks about this is the time to try new weird stuff because you can't do this stuff any other time. So if you have any ideas, anything you want to throw at the wall, see if it sticks, try it out. I thought they got away with this because it was on the short side. Thatcher's not built for comedy. Like, he's just even barely built to be the straight man in a comedy. But they mostly got away with it. And then, and they still got their 420 joke in because he says, because I wake and my wife bakes. And it just like spitting it out at us. But, and then giving us the, what were we talking about again? I don't know why this continues. He continues to get away with it. Afterwards, I'm like, are people going to hate me because I'm not totally hating on this segment? But I was like, I think they got away with this kind of like, cause it's not my thing either. But I thought they kind of got away with it. And I do agree also that Imperium are a stopgap, with of course the fact that with coronavirus out there, this could be anything. And so, everything's on the table for why this could be happening. Nate.
Okay, there we go. Mute off. When they were first just standing on the stage, you know, I was looking forward to a match. I mean, you know, you got Thatcher in his gear, and I mean, I don't know. I figured Riddle might have his gear on under that, you know, shirt or whatever. Then, you know, the game show starts and everything, and I rolled my eyes and I was like, okay, this is some Raw and SmackDown sports entertainment stuff, this isn't NXT. This isn't what I want to see on NXT. But, you know, like we said a couple weeks ago, you guys were just talking about, like, this is the time to try stuff. This is the time to try new things and see if they can work. And I agree. I think they made it work. Byron was kind of the unsung hero of this whole thing, coming out, you know, doing that crazy announcer voice and all that stuff. Like, it was it just didn't even seem like Byron Saxton. It was such a deviation from that just nerdy, geeky mama's boy announcer to this kind of cool, like, cool-ish game show host. So I think he really added a cool layer to that segment. But, you know, also just kind of like, yeah, like you said, you know, the marijuana references, all those jokes, they work. It hasn't quite jumped the shark for me. Why are with all these 60s and 70s references, the Newlywed Game, Jumping the Shark? What year is this? You know, it hasn't quite jumped the shark for me yet at all. I mean, every time he busts one of them out, it pops me. It makes me laugh. I enjoy it. You know, and I think they do it in such a way that, you know, yeah, it's a PG show. I mean, I can't say this with ultimate certainty, but I mean, it's probably after 9 o'clock that it's happening. You know, and they do it in such a way where I don't think, you know, I think it can slip under the radar a little bit, but yeah, you know, it is a little like, wow, I can't believe they got away with that. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed the segment when I really, really did not think I was going to. You know, I think Tom said it best. If I was in the writer's room, I would have rejected it. But in practice, they pulled it off.
All right, Darrell, you got something else?
Yes, sir. Okay. Now, next week, we have a real doozy of a show coming on. You got Finn Balor calling out his assailant. You have Killian Cross in action. You got Johnny going in action. And you got two title matches going on with Charlotte versus Io Shirai and Velveteen Dream versus Adam Cole. So this is a pretty stacked show. So what do you guys expect on this show coming up? And is this the way to start building storylines, like with Killian Cross coming? You got to think Ciampa, whoever attacked Finn, and then you got Johnny Dijak. Maybe Johnny leads to go against the North American champion and Keith Lee. And then the two title matches, do you see a change in either one of those?
Okay, so lots going on there because next week is really stacked. I think that Ciampa will probably show up as part of the Karrion Kross segment. I don't know why he wouldn't. Even if he's on hand tonight, I'm in favor of continuing to sell what happened to him and not to have him appear. And not have him appear until next week or later if they want. But and they could just give Cross and Scarlett their spotlight without having the angle happen. But I think either one of those is a good decision to have it happen or not. Whenever there's a stacked show like this, I usually predict a title change. Even if I don't see one specific title change that makes sense to me, it just seems like there has to be one anytime there's a big, big show like this. That said, I don't think we'll see one. Although I would not be overly surprised if Io beats Charlotte and then that allows Charlotte to move back on. On the other hand, I feel like Charlotte in this bully role in NXT is doing a lot of good for the brand. So that's my 50-50. Just like Tom said this week with Lee and Priest, it really was a pick 'em for me. I love that in a championship match, and that's something we didn't used to get in NXT. We used to always feel like we knew where it was going, except for with Shayna Baszler, because it went on for so long. We just were like, okay, this has to be it. Yeah, and then Dream could go over Cole, but I would have been way, way surer about that before this whole Twitter thing happened. I don't know where that's going to go now, but I thought it was interesting that Dream, who almost always is on the show in some way, even if it's just backstage or in a pre-taped segment, did not appear. They talked about him showing up next week, but they made a point of not having him here. So even though he must be on hand, they did not have him appear this week. So maybe it's a, this will blow over, this too shall pass kind of thing. So that's my long waves, not committing to anything. Tom.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to go too deep on the Dream thing since, you know, we don't know the full story yet. I'm sure we'll know the full story soon. It would not change. Typically, when these sorts of things happen, as we've seen with many wrestlers over the years, we don't see it change the trajectory of how they're handled or how they, you know, what seemed like was going to be the trajectory of how they were handled in their booking. Perhaps one of the most prominent examples of that being Seth Rollins, because his thing happened at a new height in his career and it did not derail him. But the difference here is that, you know, there was some, it wasn't just somebody's privacy being compromised. There are accusations of illegality. Again, not delving too deep into it, but there's some serious accusations here. So even if it's completely false and ends up being proven to be so, this stuff's being taped tonight. And I could see where they might say, like, okay, well, let's put Cole over just in case something does come of this, and then we won't regret our decision. But you know, who knows what kind of conversations they've had? It's the kind of thing where, yeah, if it was just somebody hacking Dream and leaking pictures, then I would still be of the mind that I have been of for weeks now, if not months, that Dream was going to go over Cole the first time he gets that title shot. But now, yeah, less certain for reasons outside of the storytelling. It does seem like we're getting a little bit of a mini takeover next week. I guess the other point on Dream Cole is that, yes, I agree with you, Kelly, that it may have been telling that Dream was not featured in any way. You know, he didn't even get so much as a go home promo as you hope for from babyface challengers in what's essentially a go home show. But yeah, I am very much looking forward to seeing what the chemistry is like between Charlotte and Io, although I 100% expect Charlotte to go over. And of all the things listed, I think I'm most curious about the Cross debut, just because I'm really curious how their act, Cross and Scarlett, are going to be portrayed. I would be totally fine with Ciampa showing up, although I would also be totally fine with them holding off on his return for a while to put Cross over some jobbers, or at least one, before Ciampa factors back in. But I'm curious what the presentation will be, and I hope that commentary is on the ball. You know, who knows what arrangement. Oh, I guess if Morrow is there tonight, it'll be Morrow again, Morrow, Beth, and Phillips. But, you know, last week with I believe it was Phillips and Saxton, we got the Luke Gallows Carl Anderson thing, for if people remember, however many years ago, when Gallows and Anderson came in by I want to say it was the night after WrestleMania, and they attacked the Usos, and Cole says, oh, well, we've heard that they've been signed for a long time. And I'm like, that's really how you're going to introduce these guys, that it's old news that they've been around and now we're finally seeing them? And Tom Phillips said, like, oh yeah, well, we knew that Karrion Kross got signed, but, you know, yeah, we know that he's on NXT. Like, that's not an exciting way to frame this. So I hope that Morrow can light a bit more of a fire.
Yeah, just remember, announcers, we're with you. Like, we're on the side. We're buying into what you tell us to buy into in general, like, unless we're dicks about it. Like, we want to believe. We want it to still be real to us. Damn it. Okay. Nate, on this various, on these segments.
Yeah. So, I guess I'll start with you know, Karrion Kross. I'm really curious to see, you know, exactly where he is going to fit in as well. I think it does make sense, you know, to see, obviously see a Ciampa feud at that point. Yeah, we'll obviously see where that goes. I'm really just not a fan of the name change, and I can't get over it. You know, I mean, I get it, you know, and I know there's a little bit of a deeper meaning to Karrion. You guys can look it up. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe he didn't want to give up Killer Kross. They probably can't use Killer Kross now that I think about it. So, I mean, I guess I get it, but at the same time, I don't know, just something about, I keep thinking Karen, like, you know, your mom, Karen, or something, your aunt. It just doesn't instill fear into my soul, you know? So I don't know. I'm hoping that doesn't you know, derail him any. I don't think it will, but I know at least for me, it's already defined him down a hair. Scarlett, not so much. You can lose a last name. How many people in the WWE already have? So, you know, that's cool. Let's see. What else are we talking about here? What else were we talking about here?
It's about next week's Loaded show. Do you see any championships changing hands?
Probably not. I think with everybody I think with the contenders coming up, I think for the most part, we're probably going to probably see some exciting matches, but I don't necessarily think we're going to end up seeing any titles changing hands. I'm on a little bit of a time crunch tonight. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to kind of leave it at that. I don't really think we're going to see a whole heck of a lot next week.
All right. Is this where you have to say your farewells, or are you good?
No, I'm gonna probably hang out for at least another 15-20 minutes. So I'll probably talk about whatever we talk about next. And I gotta be up really early in the morning, folks. So I'm gonna say my goodbyes early tonight.
Yeah, this guy's gotta work like an idiot. All right.
Hey, at least I can do it from my basement. I don't have to drive in.
Oh, that's right. Terrell, go ahead.
Okay. Now we had the Cruiserweight tournament tonight, and I think it was pretty interesting with the endings and stuff. And I like the post action promos that both guys gave, especially Swerve. And I like Drake's promo also. How did you guys like that? And how do you like how they're breaking it up, not putting four of those matches on, but just two? And did you like the endings and the promos?
First off, I'm just going to say I love that they're doing the promos. I love that these guys are selling this as a big deal afterwards. So, I mean, even aside from saying what I think of those promos, I love that they're doing them. That said, I also thought that both of these guys gave really good babyface promos. Swerve seemed to search for a second for what he was supposed to say, like right at the beginning. But then when he found it, he was fine. And it was just a moment, but he just kind of seemed off for just a second. And sometimes that happens. You wrestle a match and then that happens. So Swerve goes over Phantasma in 11:19. It's a simple roll up. This does not hurt Phantasma. Phantasma gets attacked again by the Luchas. This time they decided to get out of their van, something they've never done before. And they attacked at the barricade, and Phantasma fought them off again. So they're laying it on thick that Phantasma is going to be involved here, but whatever. So Swerve over Phantasma in 11:19 in the night's opener, which I thought was, which was pretty nice. And then in the semi-main, Drake Maverick goes over Tony Nese. They laid this one on thick. They made Nese tap into all the meanest, most bullying, jerkish stuff he could do, making fun of Drake, he doesn't care about his story. I mean, this fell short of Brock Lesnar's "I don't give a shit about your kids," but it was still definitely in that realm. So Drake goes over Nese in 10 minutes and 1 second. This was an extended heat sequence, mostly with Nese dominating, but Drake really, really coming back. This kind of reminded me, for the 80 of you that get this, that are both old enough and watched ECW, it kind of reminded me of Mikey Whipwreck, how he would get the hell beat out of him for a long time, and he would just lose his mind, and he would, and the little guy, it was the size of the fight and the dog is what it was all about. Drake goes over. Four guys now have had two matches, and yet there is nobody who is 2-0. So Drake is 1-1. So are Swerve and Phantasma. Nese is 0-2. Loving the tournament. I like staggering it out a little bit so they don't overexpose all the guys in the tournament. So have it take up a few weeks of TV, because this took up a good 40 minutes, all things considered. And really liked the promos as well. Tom.
Yeah. I love that they're spreading it out for that reason. And especially because of the promos, it's only an interim championship, and yet they're making it feel like it's the biggest the Cruiserweight championship has been since the Cruiserweight tournament when they first introduced it. And TJP won it against Grand Metalik in a fantastic main event. So all good stuff there. My favorite mode for Swerve is when his usual you know, as Mauro put it, just 'cause it's sticking in my mind, being the flyest in the room, quote unquote, his usual mode isn't getting the job done, and he starts to get frustrated, and you can see him trying to find like what other gear he has to go to. You know, his facial expression and the way he paces out the build to the climax of a match is so involving. It's one of the main reasons I've latched onto him as a performer. So I wanted him to win so he wasn't out of the tournament, but I also wanted, keep wanting to say Cuerno, Fantasma to lose, because again, I'm still just the same conversation every time he comes up right now, but I'm still so stuck on really believing that he is behind these Lucha kidnappings, and that them, the luchadors attacking him 2 weeks in a row now is just a red herring, that I wanted him to lose. So, coming off of looking good in his debut with a win, now he doesn't look like a sure thing every time the bell rings. So it's a little, you can buy into it more when he does ask, when he does reveal himself and his, Wild and Mendoza come down in their masks and attack whoever they're going to attack. And maybe if every detail of my theory is falling into place, I won't be surprised if it doesn't, just because it's so detailed. But if every part of it does, then that will begin not with Phantasma directly involved, but it will begin with taking out the biggest threat on the opposing block, that being Kushida, which does give Maverick the other win. He's now in a position that another win, even in a match against Kushida, would be a direction that would be plausible for him, since he did go over Nice. That being a match where, yeah, of course, just like last week, I was so invested in the finish, we're not going to be able to fully evaluate what they did with this Drake Maverick situation until this story has been fully told, and we know for sure that he either has gotten his job back and successfully controlled his own narrative, as I noticed he just put out in an Instagram post, hashtag control your narrative, which is very telling for where he's coming from. Or whether it is, you know, he's just still released and this is a total heartbreak, but they did him some favors on the way out. So that all aside, of course, I'm still totally bought into the reality of the situation, and I want him to win his matches. So this match was not nearly as good as the Jake Atlas one because for as many chances as I've given him over the years, and for as much as they, despite how much they lean on him, I do feel that Tony Nese has an unfortunately very low ceiling. He's slotted appropriately, but never gets the job done quite as well as somebody else may have. So for his role here, he didn't really elevate the match to a particularly exciting point until the finishing sequences when Drake was taking over more on offense, and that became very exciting. So yeah, the intrigue continues with Drake going over.
Nice is a weird one to have won the championship. For them to ask him to run with them, I get
as
that.
As a babyface.
Yeah, and I get that they asked him to do a lot of jobs. I know that very shortly, every now and then I visit the site of this guy, Darren Bongiovanni, who takes down records of wrestlers. And I know that Tony Nese's televised win-loss record very shortly before he won the championship was 4 wins and 20 losses. And I was like, that's probably about what you do with Tony Nese. Like, you want him on TV a lot because he's, gosh, I don't want to say good hand, because that's fresh in people's minds how mean that is right now. But yeah, he's got his place, and I'm glad that he's around. He's somebody that I could have seen getting cut, but not getting cut, I see why. Like, he's not going to be the high man there. But the fact that he's had the championship and, say, Gentleman Jack never has, it's baffling to me. But
it is. And that babyface turn, that brief babyface run that gave him the championship, was the height of my interest in him, I guess, understandably, just due to the storyline, but also what ended up like not unselling me on him. You know, he always had a spot, but I thought, you know what, this guy's been around. He shows up a lot. He clearly is dedicated. They can call on him anytime they need him. The title run just felt like a thank you. Like, thanks for all the hard work that you're doing, even though, yeah, of course, like a Gentleman Jack would have, would have made more sense, just for one example. But he flopped so hard in that. Maybe it was just because he was a babyface, but I specifically remember one 205 Live where they had him on guest commentary, and it just felt like they were trying him in different places to see what was going to stick, and he was just so awkward and forced and stilted on guest commentary, and I was just like, man, he's, you know, good. He's got a great physique. And he can point at his eight abs, and that's about right. That's about what Tony Nese can do.
And what a thank you they gave him, because he won it at WrestleMania.
Right.
All right.
Was it over Drew Gulak too?
Boy.
I don't know.
You're asking a lot of me right now. it might have been. Murphy?
Oh, it was. Oh, well, even.
Yeah.
It was. You know. Similarly, somebody who's highly regarded as far as this championship history is concerned. Okay, well,
that is not okay, you guys. Okay, so Nate, go ahead on the cruisers.
So I think both of the cruiserweight matches tonight probably were my favorite segments of the show, to be honest. And that I really didn't have anything on the show that I didn't like. So that's saying something. I'll start with Swerve and Phantasma. I really enjoyed this. I really liked King Cuerno in Lucha Underground. You know, probably one of my favorite characters in Lucha Underground. So I was really happy and excited to see him coming in. You know, he had a really strong debut match. It was a couple weeks ago at this point, not last week, it was the week before. It's a very strong, strong opening match. But I definitely agree with Tom. I don't think I didn't necessarily want him to come in and start, you know, winning every single match either. Because I kind of think he does have something to do with this whole kidnapping thing. I know he's the one getting attacked right now. I know it potentially could be, you know, it could be somebody else. I think it is a red herring. I think he's the man behind it or has something to do with it. So, you know, I think if, you know, with him losing kind of gives him some sympathy and it makes it seem like maybe he doesn't have something to do with it. Or at least that's kind of the impression that I get. But also you had Swerve in here, and Swerve has been one of my he's been one of my picks to kind of, you know, make it to the finals or at least make it really, really far, you know, in this tournament. And I really didn't want to see him get the, you know, walk out of this match 0-2. You know, he had something to fight for, and fight for it he did. I really enjoyed the match. I thought they did a great job. I can't wait to see what happens with this whole, you know, Luchador stable kidnapping, this whole angle. It's really got me intrigued. It kind of harkens back to some of the, and I know a lot of these angles that I'm like the angles I'm talking about, Kelly especially is probably going to be rolling his eyes at me, but this is when I started watching wrestling. I was a kid. This is what drew me in. And I look back on them fondly, even though after I rewatched them, I was like, well, why do I look back on them fondly? Like, you know, like a lot of like the Ministry of Darkness. And you know, a lot of the, you know, like what the, oh God! Now I can't think of any of the names of the stables. But you had, you know,
there's the corporation and the ministry. Okay, you're talking about the disciples of Apocalypse, Nation of Domination, and
right.
Los Warriquas.
Right,
and then a little bit later than that, you had the corporation, you had corporate ministry. I couldn't think of the three earlier factions off the top of my head. But yeah, so, you know, I've always liked faction warfare and factions in general. So I'm really curious to see where this goes, where this plays out, and what they do with it. And I really do hope that Phantasma is kind of at the center of all of it. The Drake Maverick and Tony Nese match, I got so into this. I don't know if it was just when I saw that Twitter – the Twitter video when Maverick got released, like I just the emotion that he put in there, like I felt for the guy. I felt so bad for the guy. And, you know, I don't know if I choose to believe that was genuine emotion. And so, like, I've bought in hook, line, and sinker. I want to see him go all the way, become the interim champion and basically win his job back. You know, I want to see him do such a good job that they say, you know what, we can't lose you. Let's
let's give you your contract back or work something out or whatever. I am enjoying what he's doing so much. I don't want to see him off of my screen. Granted, right now it's this big underdog story. So what does he do when it's over if they do decide to keep him here? Because, you know, you can only do that underdog story so long before it gets a little tired. However, that said, I'm really, really rooting for him. The match itself, I also agree, it wasn't nearly as good as the Jake Atlas match. You know, I mean, a lot of it, I don't think Maverick got like any offense in until like the finishing sequence, if I'm remembering correctly. You know, so it did kind of seem a little bit slow and plodding, but at the same time, it kind of almost needed to be for it to build the story of Maverick, you know, overcoming all of those odds yet again. I mean, he's got a bigger opponent in Nice, and Nice isn't that big of a guy, you know, comparatively to some of the other wrestlers, and to me and probably most of you guys, he probably is a big guy, but, you know, comparatively he's not. But to Drake, he's huge.
Well, so, we all got him beat on height.
Well, yeah.
He's like 5'6". Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I guess I got him beat on height, but I still wouldn't mess with him.
No, nor I. I'm not advocating for a me versus Nice match. But yeah, he's a short dude.
All right, cool. Maybe it was just the comparison with Drake tonight. He seemed a lot taller than in my mind, but still, you know, I don't know. I lost my train of thought, but that's okay. It doesn't take much to do that. All I know is
I'm gonna hijack it again. He's actually 5'9". I still got him beat, but I don't have him beat by a whole lot.
Nah, he's gonna be beat by an inch. But I'll wrap up because I forget where I was going. But don't worry about it because, like I said, it does not take much to do that. I've really bought into this. I feel like I do remember what I was saying. So. It had to be slow and plodding because you needed to basically build to Maverick overcoming all of these odds and, you know, all of the abuse, the bullying, the verbal bullying, the physical abuse from Tony Nice and, you know, capture that victory. And it made that victory just so much sweeter, especially with all the false finishes. I absolutely adored the ending to this match. Like I said, right now, Drake Maverick has made a lifelong fan out of me. Wherever he winds up, I'm going to watch him because I really like what he's doing.
You know, it's really weird. I was talking about how I loved what Drake did and how it reminded me of Mikey Whipwreck. I pulled up Tony Nice to see his height, and Tony Nice was trained by Mikey Whipwreck. That's just a really weird confluence there.
Yeah.
JB emailed us, and this email dropped in about 2 minutes ago, and it relates exactly to what we're talking about. Do you think NXT will continue with round-robin tournaments for the likes of Dusty Classic, Mae Young Classic, etc., or will they resort back to the elimination format? I believe 100% they will resort back. You can't do a 16 or 32. Dusty Classic is kept more to like 8, but the Mae... they did like 32, and the Cruisers, they definitely did 32 the first time. And you could do two groups of 16 or four groups of 8, but that would be a ton of matches. I would watch that because that's what I do with my life, but a lot of people wouldn't. So I think maybe this will be an extremely special thing we see for small numbers of people. In Japan, they do this because they'll do a 12 or 15 or 18 shows, and that's fine because that's only about 3 weeks. And essentially, they're just showing you what otherwise would be house shows. There's not even commentary on some of these. That is not something they would do in WWE, probably, although the first, I want to say, three King of the Ring tournaments were actually house shows that they just did in the same city every year. Oh, where was it? Maybe St. Louis. I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, there were three, maybe four King of the Ring tournaments before the one that everybody knows as the first, which Brett won. But Brett actually won one before that one that was off TV. And I think Tito Santana won one and Don Morocco. But this is just a memory lane thing. So, Darrell, do you have anything else for us, or are we going to move on?
Yeah, that was it for me. Those are the questions. I enjoy hearing y'all guys' conversation. I just leave you guys with this. I do say, because next week they had a big match, and you have the big Johnny and Dijak match also. I think that would lead to Johnny going against Keith Lee, maybe, just in case, especially if you get a cold loss or something like that in the tournament. So that will answer one question for another Bill. So hopefully we get that, and I continue to listen.
All right. Sounds good, Darrell. Always good to have you. And I do think that Lee and Johnny is a match that almost certainly will take place. I know Johnny's already held that championship, but I think he's tailor-made for it now. There are two matches that we have not talked about yet. So in the absence of any questions, we have other listeners, but it doesn't look like we have any other questions.
Before we talk about those two matches, I'm going to hijack you this time, and I'm going to say goodnight, everybody, because, like I said, I got to get up early in the morning and do the whole work thing, unfortunately. So,
all right, man.
All right. So take care, everybody. At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, NXT Hits and Misses, and enjoy the rest of the show.
I'll see you on your right, Nate. For Bash at the Beach.
Remember, right. Nate, you can't hang up on Skype because you called us in.
Right. So I guess I'm just going to mute my mic and hang up in the morning.
All right. Sounds good.
All
right. God, I'm glad I thought of that because I'm not sure you were thinking about it.
I would have
totally just ended the podcast.
Oh, there we go.
good night, all.
Ooh. All right. We will see you, Nate and Tom. We will play it off here with a couple of matches. Yeah, let me go to what I'm pretty sure was my favorite match, which actually was Mia Yim versus Charlotte. I thought that there was some good psychology here, and I thought there was just enough of an issue. Charlotte, of course, goes over 10 minutes and 51 seconds in a non-title affair. Io Shirai makes her appearance afterwards. I like how normally the post-match appearance is just on the ramp and blah, blah, blah. They look at each other. She stomps down because she don't give an F. So she walked down and stomped, said a few things in Japanese, and then ended with next week. So at this point, we were starting to realize next week is going to be a pretty loaded show. But I really thought that this was a really very good match for Mia. You forget just how much of a pro Charlotte has become. She had a good run in NXT the first time, but she's just doing such great things right now as a heel. But Charlotte goes over Mia, and Charlotte against Io next week. So we're on the fast track. We got a match this week, and we get what next week. And I mean, it could be the end of the line. I don't feel like it should be, but at the same time, I do think that Io's perhaps your next person to win a championship. I would have said Dakota, but Dakota winning makes no sense against this heel act. So I don't know, Tom, what do you think?
I'm still 100% in Charlotte's camp. I think as while I agree that Io is an act that could hold the championship right now, I think that Charlotte's got some more people to work with during this run. But yeah, with this match, with knowing the personal, I don't know about friendship, but at least acquaintanceship that Charlotte and Mia have, and that I know means a lot to Mia Yim based on things that she said over the years. And you know, not that this is the story that they were telling, but I know it means a lot to them because they both are domestic abuse survivors and they connected on that level. Knowing that they have that connection, that's what really invested me in this. And I do think that while I agree with you about the psychology, these two women could have a better match and probably would have wanted to have a better match, although this is what it needed to be as just something for Charlotte to do before actually defending the title in what will surely be a higher level affair. So yeah, nothing wrong with it, but I don't think it's the level that they would want out of a more fully told storyline between the two of them. I did go back during the commercial break to see if I could find their 2014 match, just out of curiosity to see if they were going to end up doing any callbacks to it, or to see if they're, you know, I was mostly just looking for callbacks, and I ended up being able to watch back the match twice because it's so short. It was just a nameless local talent. You know, she had Yim written on her pants, but she was at the time she was most known for working as Jade in TNA. And it was really just a very brief squash for Charlotte, who was already champion at the time. And while I was mostly looking for stuff that Yim might draw upon for tonight's match from that match 6 years ago, I really ended up just seeing more of the differences in Charlotte and how she just seems like so much more. I was definitely liking her at the time as well. But tonight, you know, you just see that direct comparison, and she seems like so much more of a confident and assured performer, and she's much more deliberate in the things that she's doing and the story that she's telling in the ring. And being an in-ring storyteller has always been my favorite thing about Charlotte. So we got a little bit of that tonight, even if not at like a high climax kind of level. So, good stuff. And then the EO thing, nothing really to add beyond what you said about it. EO's personality continues to shine through even in brief snippets, and I'm very excited to see how these two match up against one another next week.
Yeah, and just knowing how to be the bully and the brute is something that that Charlotte does so well. A lot of times folks have that large sort of rangy build and they don't know how to make it work for them. And I feel like she makes it work in the same way that somebody like Walter does. It seems like a weird comparison, but you could have that physique and not have it stand out. But if you know how to use it, it really, really does. I know that it's a stupid thing to act like, that Charlotte's this diamond in the rough. I just figured out, but I just want to say that you could have 100 Charlottes and only one could step out of the shadows and become as great as she has. And this is the one. We are in the best timeline, folks. Dexter Lumis versus Shane Thorne. This went 3 minutes and 29 seconds. It was really nice to see Shane Thorne again, because I think that he, for me, the best heel gatekeepers they have on hand are Shane Thorne and, of course, Kona Reeves. I think that Thorne was doing some really good snotty stuff against the breakout tournament people a few months ago. What I think is funny now is he's still in there with a breakout tournament guy. That's still his mission, is that he wants to go over the shiny new toys. But Dexter Lumis, if you weren't sure that last week was a heel turn, this should solidify it, because Thorne is playing a consummate heel. Lumis goes over Thorne in 3 minutes and 29 seconds. Nothing earth shattering here, but I thought a fairly enjoyable squash, and he just put him down with, he did a Uranagi into a, I can't remember what he did, but it was a hold, and it sure did pass out Shane Thorne. Anything on this match?
Thorne, who sold it very well. Really nothing new to add based on this match to my thoughts on the Lumis act. It's still something that I'm not really jiving with, but just because it's a fresh ingredient in what had become a very samey roster week to week, I'm okay with it, and I know that other people are digging it, so I'll go along with it and see what they do with him. But on the other side of it, my main takeaway here was just like, as much as I agree with you about Thorne being in this position, and I understand that they're working with a limited roster at this point, there had to be another guy that they could have put in this position. Because Thorne, like up until this past Monday, yes, he was appearing on Raw in his relatively new tag team with his roommate, Brendan Vink. And they were still a job team, so him being in this position wouldn't have concerned me. But as of 2 days ago, they are officially a Monday Night Raw tag team with MVP as their manager. So unless there's something in store where these guys just turn out to be losers on Raw and MVP switches to a new act like Cedric and Ricochet or Apollo Crews or something, it just felt we've complained about. On this show, we haven't really complained about it, but it's been a complaint that many, including ourselves in different contexts, have voiced that on the main roster shows, they're bringing up people who train in the PC and work the coconut loop and may appear from time to time on NXT TV, but not in a major capacity. But you get your Indy Hartwells and your Denzel Desjardins, and they say, you know, oh, these are NXT wrestlers, and then they just get squashed. So it kind of gives NXT a bad name, even though they're cleaning that up a bit now. This sort of felt like revenge, like, oh, well, you're taking one of our guys for Raw. Well, we're just going to job him out on our show then. You know, they made no mention of that, of course, but it was just such odd timing. It just felt like, you know, you had to have they had to have someone else back there who could have passed out to this. But I was going to say put his shoulders down. I was like, wait, that's not what happened. But yeah, just bizarre to put Thorne out there as the adversary for this match.
And here's where I say my weekly, I don't really watch Raw. So,
yeah,
so I didn't know that this
it.
Happened. He's a tag teamer losing in a singles context. So I guess there's that. But it's so weird then that they would not make any mention of this. Like
right.
These shows exist in different vacuums. It's very weird what we've got. It seems like every day they're getting closer to the Monday Night Wars attitude with each other, which makes no sense because they are in fact the same company.
Right.
So,
yeah. And again, complimenting what the main roster is doing, you know, they're cleaning up that whole like referencing them as NXT wrestlers thing, but they've even started to, and this is, I don't know whether they're going to continue doing this, but on multiple occasions in major angles over the past number of weeks, they've referenced back to NXT storylines. They're making it seem like if you don't watch on Wednesday nights, you're missing part of the story. They had a rematch for now the WWE title between Drew and Andrade, and the story was built around the fact that Andrade beat Drew for the NXT title, and they talked about the arm injury and everything, and then Nia Jax was in a match with Asuka this past Monday. They talked about how, or Asuka cut a promo about how she's beat Nia before, and that happened in NXT. I forget whether they did it on the main roster. It could have been talking about that. But even more prominently, you've got a Street Profits Viking Raiders match coming up, and the Raiders' whole angle going into the match is like, oh yeah, you talk big because you're the champions, but you haven't faced you've never beaten us, and the only reason you became NXT tag champs is because we relinquished and went to a different brand. So they're talking about it on the main roster now. They finally gotten to that point, and yet, yeah, you know, I definitely agree with you. You know, singles guy or sorry, tag guy in a singles context. But there, again, there's just no mention of it, and it seems weird that they, you know, 2 days removed, they're like, hey, here's a new act. They don't have a name yet, but they've got MVP as their manager, and they're already targeting their first babyface team to take down, and we're just gonna, you know, just going to job them out on a different program.
All right. We have one more email. This is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. As state governments begin the easing of restrictions against businesses, I imagine the WWE will be on the leading edge of this movement as opposed to playing it safe longer. That said, when do you suspect that the next in-person takeover will be? Do you think the weekly shows in their current iteration are doing a good enough job to build to the next takeover? Thanks as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Okay. I think that, I mean, it seems like the next takeover is next week because of what's going on. I feel like in the absence of takeover, they can just make really big weekly shows. Once upon a time, the takeovers did just preempt the weekly shows. That's actually how it was in the early days of the network. So I guess it's not such a bad thing. It's not something they would have wanted to do, but now they have direct competition. So I'm guessing they're more willing to play that game. Say, well, I mean, what the heck? I mean, we put it on Wednesday up against Dynamite. Why not? I don't think we will see a takeover in June as we have once or twice in the past, but I'm bullish that we'll see one in August. Nobody knows, but I think that they will at least build one for August, and hopefully we'll see one, and they'll do with it what they have to do with it. And if it so happens that we're still playing two empty arenas, I think that they will plan for that, but they will have it be that live Sunday night thing. With the giant caveat, as always, that nobody knows what the hell's going on with our world now. Tom?
Yeah, what you're talking about reminds me, you and I were chatting recently about the early days of NXT, even prior to current incarnation, when it was more of what we refer to as a quote-unquote game show. And I don't know if you ended up going that far back, but I did recently rewatch the very first episode, and it's a side note, it's god awful. But I coincidentally, Wade posted one of his flashback hotlines this past week for VIP members, and he's talking about how ECW is transitioning over to being NXT. That happened very abruptly over the course of 2 weeks. And his theory was that WWE was really trying to oversaturate the market at the time that TNA was trying to go live on Monday nights. And I had forgotten that was happening at the exact same time. So, you know, NXT sort of may have grown out of trying to be competition in some form, and now we're still talking about it in that context. But that's just because what you said reminded me of it. As far as the whole COVID-19 thing, yeah, DeSantis put out a speech today talking about sporting events maybe getting back to some sense of maybe not sense of normalcy, but at least being able to invite fans in with certain limitations in place as far as June or July. So he's not even really putting a timeline out there. And from where I'm sitting, I'll just say it, if a dipshit like I think that's my first one of those on this podcast, but there it is. if a dipshit like DeSantis is putting out timelines, he's not the guy that I want to listen to.
Even before you went down that dark road, I was just musing to myself that the second you say the word DeSantis, your voice changes. Like, you do not get very dark very often,
yeah.
But it happens the second you say his name.
He's a guy I've seen in person a couple times too. Because I work at a racetrack, and we have a race that's called the Governor's Cup, and he shows up for that. Or at least he did when he wasn't the governor, and he was there in lieu of Rick Scott, who was too busy to show up to the Governor's Cup. And now that he is the governor, he doesn't show up, and he sends somebody else in his place. But the reason I bring up the racetrack is because, you know, it's a sporting venue, and it's not a big deal kind of a place, but they aren't televised. So they don't make money if there isn't a gate. So they aren't going to run events until there are fans in the stands. But DeSantis put out this immediately. They had this whole, like, paragraphs long bullet pointed outline as to how, maybe they had it in the can already, but as to how they were going to start renting out the track to private groups of no more than 10 people that have to remain socially distanced while they're practicing in their race cars. And of course, you know, all these people who I work with who are already frothing to get back to the track, I do it for a paycheck. They do it because they love the sport. You know, they are frothing to get back to the track, and they see this news go out, and now it's just like a cavalcade on Facebook of people going like, oh my God, we're going to go back racing soon. And because it's a paycheck, I will show up, but I'm not looking forward to it because I don't trust that a lot of people are going to remain socially distanced as they should. And I feel like a lot of this regathering, what I personally feel is too soon, because I'm listening to experts and not politicians on what we should be doing here. I just think it's too soon, and it sends the wrong message. So the more getting back together in groups, and the more that WWE keeps on putting on their shows, although, you know, that's a whole other thing almost. It sends the wrong message to people that makes us think like, oh, we can just get back together and everything could be all back to normal. I mean, just today I was driving to the elementary school to pick up my kids' lunches because they're still doing that. And I'm just noticing fewer and fewer masks on people. It's just like, oh, we did it for a week, but now DeSantis said we're fine again. So
People get bored so easily. They're just like, oh, we did it. Like, that's not something I'm thinking about anymore.
Right. That's a great way of putting it.
I was working at a restaurant when 9/11 happened. And about a week later, we had TVs in there. And of course, a week later, that's all that was on. And I walked past these ladies, and one of them was like, I'm not even watching it anymore. I was like, well, that didn't actually change what happened. Like, the fact that you're bored of 9/11 is not, it's apropos of nothing. And that's what I think of every time that I see people being like, it's time to get back to work. I'm like, no, it's literally not.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely. Absolutely. With the racetrack, because it's a paycheck that I'm not earning right now, when they do go back to events, yeah, I will go back to earn that paycheck, even though I won't be happy to it. When it comes to NXT, if NXT starts letting people in Full Sail in June or July, and they are making sure that the seats are however many feet apart, or they're taking temperatures on the way in, or whatever it is they end up doing, which I have trouble believing that they're actually going to, we had a caller on Wade's, Monday night show that said, like, well, I think I've got some bad news for you guys. I think when we get fans back in the stands, they're not going to be as distanced as you would like. And I we had to move on with the show, but I wanted to agree with them. Cause I really have trouble believing that they're going to implement effective controls on that kind of thing. And that they're not going to be more concerned with how it looks on TV compared to the prior normal. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, I don't get paid to go to the NXT shows. I pay for a ticket to go to the NXT shows. So I'm not going to do that right away. I'm going to continue to listen to the experts. Answering Katani's question, yeah, it is a giant question mark. I could totally see something happening before the end of summer because, Vince is working with politicians on this, and he does want to be, like after 9/11, he does want to be one of the first ones that are back to some sense of normal. And it's not something I'm going to be a part of until I can have someone like a Dr. Fauci on screen showing me a graph that makes me feel a lot more comfortable.
It's a perfect time to be a guy like me. I don't like to be around anyone.
Yeah,
all right.
There you go.
Yeah, it's perfect. Great world for recluses. So, that made me think of the Dexter Lumis thing.
did they announce him from?
They did. They did again. Yep. He's still from Recluse, Oregon. Okay. So that is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. This was our shortest show in a while. Oh, well done us. But yeah, this, you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk. Find me and talk about wrestling on Twitter, talk about board games on Instagram. That's what we can do. But we will see you next week for a very stacked show. And in the not so distant future, a little under 2 months, Tom and I should be starting a VIP, I believe, podcast about the humble beginnings of NXT. And we don't mean the beginning of the game show, but the beginning of NXT as it is now, because it will be NXT's 8-year anniversary as it is now on June 20th. So our deal is we're going to be going back 8 years to the week, and we're going to talk about what we see. So you're going to hear about Seth Rollins, Big E. Do they have any potential? Can they make the main roster? We'll let you know. All right. Tom, who are you?
Yep, very excited for that, and placing it in historical context as best we can. And I'm at Tom Staup on Twitter if you want to give that follow. I was indeed just looking at the time, like, oh, 11:45, not bad for us. And then we got asked about COVID-19, and now it's almost midnight, but that's how it goes.
All right, we will see you in 7, ladies and gentlemen. Cheers. And we're off.
All right. And I wonder if we're still on Blog Talk, though, like, because of Nate being called in.